This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Okay, hello, I'm Tom Scragg. It's July and it's the end of the Star Formation Regions Conference here at Manchester. I'm sitting with Dr. Anna Kapinska from the University of Western Australia. So welcome and thanks for taking some time out to come and talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
Most welcome. Okay, so just a little bit about what are you here for? You presented a paper. How did that go?
Well, I hope it went very well. Yes, so I came specifically for this very specialized meeting, but it was a fantastic meeting to present my research as well as learn a lot, and I definitely do. So
that's good. University of Western Australia. Where in Western Australia?
Well, there's only really one place there. It's extremely remote. Western Australia is half of the country, and there is one big city. It's Perth.
Okay.
And it's basically that 80% of the population lives there.
Right, okay.
But it's close to the site of the SKA project coming up. So it's like SKA is 700 kilometres north from Perth.
Okay, so it's still quite a distance to travel, but closer than we are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's one of the closest, largest large city to
this case. Okay, so originally you studied in the UK? Is it just the PhD?
I just did a PhD, yes.
Right, okay. Was that fun?
Absolutely. I enjoyed it very much. I was in the Southampton University, but yeah, that south of the UK was great.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what your talk was, what you presented at the conference?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a radio astronomer, so I've been, that's why the SKA. I've been working on a lot of surveys, just especially low frequency surveys with the new telescope. And what I presented is actually one of the dead science projects I've been doing with these surveys. It's just to look at the radio emission from local galaxies. And what I mean local, they are really not far away from Milky Way, as for astronomical distances, obviously. And what we were really interested to basically see where that emission comes from, we're not looking at the black holes here, we're looking at the actually star-forming galaxies, which are, some of them are not that off from Milky Way, for example. And that will be emission coming from the star formation and everything else that may be happening in these galaxies, basically.
Okay. You look at them in radio, can you resolve them visually as well? Do we have images? So do you know which part of the galaxy you're looking at?
Yes, so it depends on what instrument you're using. The one I'm using is actually fairly low angular resolution. However, it still can resolve it a little bit. In my research, you won't be able to tell exactly which satellite exactly came from, but you know whether it is the outer part, if it's halo, or is it the central compact region that is the full star formation. You can resolve that, yeah.
We've talked to a few people, and they've been studying distant galaxies, so old galaxies looking way back in time. So you're looking at the local group, so these are fairly recently formed.
It depends, actually. So actually, I looked from galaxies from the sculpture group, and they've had history. Some of them actually had some interaction going on, and the difference is they're much closer, so we can see more recent changes because the light was much faster than from many, many years ago, as in the high redshift ones.
You're looking at star-forming regions, so that implies there are parts of the galaxy that don't form stars. Is there a reason why some places are active and others aren't?
Right. So radio astronomy maybe is a little bit peculiar. The objects we would see in radio waves is, well, I've been always working on AGN previously, actually. That means the supermassive black holes and jets. And that is the one very bright, actually, aspect of in radio objects. Now, when we actually say the star forming, that means that you wouldn't actually have the black hole in there. So the emission that comes from it is from the star formation, not from the black hole and anything that may come from the black hole itself.
Okay.
That's what I really mean by that.
Okay, so you're not getting a picture where you can resolve individual regions.
No.
It's the balance between what goes on at the centre and the rest of the galaxy. So it's very definitely star formation looking at, not
the correct
strange stuff that black holes are doing at the centre.
Absolutely. Actually, the galaxies that I looked at, none of them actually had a black hole. So everything comes from the star formation.
Oh, right, okay.
Within the galaxy, yeah.
So what does the star formation rate, and what are you studying in terms of star formation there?
So in radio you can actually see two principal components. One would be so-called the H2 regions, which basically are the birth of the places of the birth of the stars, and the ones that you will see in radio are the most massive ones. They usually are more massive than H solar masses. And then as they age, these massive stars will turn into supernovae. And the supernova are also being, visible in radio waves, because at some point when they explode, you'll have shocks expanding. So these are the two components that basically balance each other in radio. Okay. And you can see more depending on the stellar populations and the evolutionary path of the galaxy. You see more of the supernova and more of the H2 regions.
Right.
And so that's really what you're looking at. Yeah.
So is this a hot topic in astronomy? Lots of astronomers around? I mean, we've had, 50, 60 people here for a week for this conference. I'm guessing it's an exciting area.
It is definitely an exciting area for the radio astronomy, because up until now we were really mainly focused on the black holes, because that's the brightest objects in radio waves. But now with the new telescopes, as we're moving towards SKA, we're actually seeing more and more of the normal part of the universe, right? The normal galaxy, the star formation. And that is a hot topic, because we really couldn't do it that well before, not in radio frequencies.
Okay. So is this your primary research now? You mentioned black holes. Are you still carrying on with that?
I do. It's an additional, I'd say, expertise that I just gained in the past couple of years. But I'm super excited. It's all encompassed by the radio processes, the process that are giving rise to the radio emission. So fundamentally, it's the same. This is. Really.
Right, yeah.
It's all electrons in magnetic fields or in ionized medium, really.
Yeah, it's very difficult to sort out what you're looking at sometimes.
True, that is true. So that's why it was actually one of the things that I find really exciting. So with the instruments that I've been using, you don't have really good spatial resolution when you look at images. But what you can do instead is to look at the spectral energy distribution. So you take a measurement at different frequencies and construct the spectral energy distribution, or just spectra as we call it. And you can actually get a lot of science out of that. You basically then can model what processes are happening and that give rise to this distribution of the other. And I find that really exciting.
So what are your plans for the next year or couple of years in terms of the work and observing? Do you get to go to the telescopes? Just as a...
No.
I always like to ask these questions.
I've seen the radio telescopes I work on.
Okay.
Just because I made a special trip to basically have a look. What am I using on a daily basis? But no, normally you don't. Everything is done through the computer. Sometimes it is left to the schedule if there is stuff on duty. But sometimes it's not, and I've been now involved also in a survey when basically I'm sitting in front of my computer in Perth. I'm moving and steering the telescope that is not far away from Sydney.
Okay.
And it is this massive telescope. It's exciting, but then you have 12 hours, you're sitting in the middle of the night. And you just basically look at the plots, because you're not doing an image at that point.
Yep.
But but roughly how the radio astronomical observations really look.
Okay. So are you using a single telescope or an array?
No, I was actually using an array.
Right.
So there's six dishes. That's the Australian compact array. They do move those and observe with those. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So do you have plans or program for the next 12 months, 2 years? Things you're going to look at? Time on telescopes?
Yeah. Well, goodness, I have data that I have to get through. But yeah, the plan, there's a few things. There's definitely, I'd like to take this work that I've been working on recently on the local star-forming galaxies and starburst galaxies, to take it further and then get as much science out of it as we can. But also, I have been working on the black holes and the radio galaxies, so there's a little bit of work over there as well. And there's a number of surveys that we still deliver, and the surveys are there to, once we're done with them, calibrate everything to make sure that the quality is assured. We release it to public, so actually any astronomer can use it.
Okay.
As well. So
you release the data to the public?
Actually, it is publicly available, so if anyone from public wants to use it, they can as well.
Okay.
It's not protected by any, passwords or anything, so
right.
Anyone can access it.
Okay, note to the listener, if you want to do that, Make sure you've got a big enough computer to actually process the data.
Images.
Images.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're getting images. We process the data on the supercomputers.
You mentioned starburst galaxies. What's a starburst galaxy then?
Starburst galaxies are the ones that have particularly high star formation rates, and they literally bursting with star formation. And one that I was looking at in this particular study actually is one of the very famous and archetypal ones, which is called NGC 253, which is actually called also Sculptor galaxy. And it's absolutely fantastic. It has a absolutely spectacular radio halo, and this halo is actually produced by the stellar winds coming from its starburst nucleus. It's that powerful in producing the star. Yeah, so it's spectacular galaxy, basically.
How do you tell the difference then between that starburst and an active galactic nuclei, for example?
That's a very good question. It actually is, because they are so powerful and so bright. This particular one is very close, so you can resolve it. You know exactly where the emission comes from. But if you put this galaxy in a higher redshift, the only thing which you're going to see is unresolved source, and then how you tell it. That's right. So you do have to look at the multiple wavelengths, and what we do is look at the spectral energy distribution as well. Not only, for example, like, as I said, this 10 gigahertz, but much, much, much more from radio through infrared, UV, X-rays and so on. And then you try to model that, and that will tell you whether the emission comes from AGN or the stars, because that will behave differently with the energy distribution. That's one, for example.
Okay. So looking at different wavelengths?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
And obviously, I mean, the very powerful AGN, they'll have jets, which obviously this galaxy won't.
Right, okay. So you can resolve the jets as separate from the galaxies in the
sometimes
ones
if,
you look at?
Sometimes if they are not that powerful or just are very young, you may not resolve the jets, and what you just see is unresolved object. But if that's an AGN, that would predominantly come in from jets.
Okay. In terms of the conference then, what's the most useful or the most interesting thing that you found?
Everything. No, I think it's one of
I'll
the...
I'll pass that to George. You'll be very pleased.
I actually found this conference like one of the few that just drives you and you just follow, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it, and there were lots of very good science. And maybe because, as well, this is a relatively new subject for me, especially in the submillimeter and millimeter regime, so I'm radio astronomy from the low frequency range. So a lot of it was new to me. I mean, not totally new, so I knew a little bit, so I could just fill in the gaps
okay.
in the knowledge. That's why I actually found that extremely useful.
Okay. So outside of astronomy, do you have interests or hobbies or a passion that you get involved in?
Too many. Oh my goodness. I think there are two that I've been active in recently. Well, I love photography.
More images?
Well, but that's why I actually do analog black and white photography.
Uh-huh, okay.
I don't do it in the front of the computer.
It's in film,
exactly. In the dark room, when you don't do the electronic digital stuff that I do every single day.
Right.
It's a little bit way out, I suppose, and usually more chemistry related stuff. So that's one of the things I do. The other things that I really like and enjoy is medieval reenactment.
Okay.
That's totally different, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is much more historical, and you reenact it, so that's a lot of aspects to it. You can do military-like, fashion-like, just trying to reconstruct the living, how it used to be 5 centuries or 7 centuries or more ago.
Okay, very, very historically accurate, or...?
Reasonably.
Okay. Do you have a particular character
No. So I've never actually created a persona. It was more interested in just placing myself, like, in 1400 and just try to live that time.
Okay. Just lie out in the desert and look at the night sky and... More astronomy.
Well, I got really involved in it in the UK, and there's lots of events, so you basically go on the weekend and you don't have your mobile phone and you don't have your computer, so...
Yeah. A complete break. Yeah.
Complete break, and yes, you can look at the sky and at the stars.
Oh, okay. Oh, sounds fascinating. Well, it's really good to talk to people about what they do outside of astronomy, as well as the things that we spend our days working on.
Days and nights.
Days and nights, yes.
That's right.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming to talk to us today, Anna. And again, I hope you enjoyed the conference and good journey.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.